श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय। श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय। श्री श्री देव जी गोपाल जी की जय। फिर बाप महोत्सव तिथि श्रीला गोपाल बात गोस्वामी की जय। फिर बाप महोत्सव तिथि श्री रामचंद्र कविराज की जय। गौर भक्त वृंद की जय। गौर प्रेमानंद हरि बोल। सो गुड इवनिंग all of you, welcome, and welcome to all of you online as well, present there. Thanks for joining us, and as usual, we are meeting these last weeks on Thursdays for Ishtagosti, our questions and answers. Maybe some of the following weeks we may have some further meetings in that connection, now that our Guru Maharaj has continued his journey back to the US, and we may have some holes to fill, if you will, in terms of giving some further kata, so we can have some lectures every day. Let's see how that unfolds. But for sure, Thursdays here we are. So I don't know if there's any question, topic you may like to hear about today. Okay, here I have one in the chat, but I will give some priority to the ones present here physically. So.
I was thinking maybe you could say something about Ramachandra Kaviraj.
Okay. Ramachandra Kaviraj ki jai. For those who didn't hear the question, basically, Braj Sundari here was requesting to share some words about Ramachandra Kaviraj, whose Tirubab Mahotsav, or Disappearance Day, is being celebrated today. So, there is not much to begin with that is have been said about Ramachandra Kaviraj, at least that I have been able to know. I recognize I have not engaged in the most comprehensive research in that direction, but whatever I have tried to find in general terms is not that much. Ramachandra Kaviraj is disciple of Srinivas Acharya. So his father, I cannot recall his name now, but his father was an associate of Mahaprabhu. So Ramachandra Kaviraj comes like one generation after that, with all that implies coming one generation after Mahaprabhu and his associates. How was the opposite of unfold? Wrap up? His lila. As you can see. Sorry?
Enfolds.
Okay, infolds. And you can see that in the spirit of the songs of personalities like Sri Narottam Das Thakur. Mainly, Sri Narottam Das Thakur is someone really marked by that. Some days ago, more than a week ago, when we were celebrating the Tirubab Mahotsav of Sri Mandulal Chandra Prabhu, where we started by singing this song composed by Thakur Narottam called Jayanilu Prima Dhana. I mean, it begins like that. And basically the whole song, which is a classical offering to be presented on the day of on some Vaishnava, on the disappearance of some Vaishnava, it's a song in which is basically a list of names, a list of lamentations attached to particular names, to particular personalities that left one after another, after another, and after another. This is a very classical theme in our Gaudiya lineage, no? The concept of, we are speaking about some form of lamentation in our Venu Gita, but also in the context of Gaur Lila and the Sadaka dynamics that are included there, there's another form of lamentation also in connection to how devotees relate to one another, and especially when one devotee passes from this world, that's generally considered a great moment. I mean, of course, it's glorious, and it's a very important thing, because as we always say, in the same way that you have to offer your life in the service to Krishna, you have to offer your death in the service of Krishna. You have to live for the pleasure of Krishna, you have to die for the pleasure of Krishna. So that's, if you will, our last offering in this particular body. So we are, and that's a very crucial offering, so crucial that we need to prepare the whole life for that offering. No? Because you have many other offerings throughout your life, and you don't have maybe for entering the altar, you have to prepare, you take a bath, you put tilak, you try to put a sudhi to enter into the proper, and something else. But for that last final offering, whole lifetime of preparation. So we want to die for the pleasure of Krishna. And of course, someone who does that is a glorious personality, as in it's a glorious moment, but at the same time that will be perceived by those around that person as a great loss. Of course, a great loss in one sense is a great gain, because that person is entering a realm when there will be a very comprehensive contribution to a very comprehensive need, as we always say. I mean, if we feel we have some needs on this plane, you don't have a clue about the level of necessity that there is there in the higher domain. Now, as we always mention, when Sri Radha and Krishna are separated and their need to be united, and both of them are dying in separation from each other, and dying literally, I'm not just exaggerating here, and dying in a way that we cannot even conceive while remaining alive. So you can imagine the level of necessity at that point to make all the possible arrangements to get them together, and how much each of the different members, especially in this case, we will say those who are mostly acquainted with those with that necessity, will be willing to give to, as sometimes poetically said, to die billions of times for facilitating the union of the two of them. They are willing to do that. They won't die even one time, but their disposition is, if facilitating their union implies that I die millions of times, I'm ready to pay that price. So my point with this is, there's such a necessity there. So the point is, if a properly accomplished personality enters that domain where there's such a level of necessity, that's to be celebrated. That's to be celebrated, because there's so much service to do there in comparison to any other realm, basically. So, but at the same time, there is a type of lamentation in the sense of losing the immediate company of that person and things like this, to the point of, for example, when Sriman Mahaprabhu asked Sri Rai Ramananda in their Istagosti, today we have Istagosti, they had their own Istagosti after the Ramananda Sambad, which in itself is a kind of Istagosti, because Mahaprabhu is inquiring, speak to me about Sadhya Sadhana Tattva, by quoting Shastra and so on, and different layers of content are being revealed there. But after that, it comes like a more, I don't know if there is a particular term in English for that, no? But sometimes I see that in interviews they do this type of things, that they present questions and the person has to reply, giving an answer of 3-4 words. Like, do you have a word for that in English? No? Okay. But you understand what I meant, no? Like, I ask something, you have to reply like sutra-like form. Next question, sutra-like form, next question. So after the official Ramananda Sambad comes this type of dynamics. At one point, Mahaprabhu asked Ramananda Roy, what's the greatest suffering? So, I mean, if anyone asks you that, you may say something, but if Mahaprabhu is asking that, you have to know what to reply. And of course, Ramananda Roy was passing all the tests. No? This came after he passed the test, after Mahaprabhu told him, that's superficial, go deeper, that's superficial, go deeper, that's superficial, go deeper, shut up, please. No. Stop speaking, you are saying too much now. So after that, they have this type of exchange, and Ramananda replies successfully to each one of those questions. So Mahaprabhu asked, what's the greatest of sufferings? Rai Ramananda replied, Krishna Bhakta Viraha Bina Dukkha Nahi Ar. Basically. That was his sutra, Bengali sutra-like reply. Krishna Bhakta Viraha Bina Dukkha Nahi Ar. So Krishna Bhakta means a devotee of Krishna. Viraha means separation. Krishna Bhakta Viraha Bina. Bina means without or apart from in this case. Dukkha Nahi Ar. Dukkha means affliction. Nahi Ar means nahi, there is not. Nahi Ar. I do not conceive of any other suffering apart from separation from the devotees of Krishna. He was not speaking literally about physical passing, but just separation from the devotees of Krishna. What to speak, that type of separation, that's a particular type of separation. That's why when a great personality passes, sometimes that's called Viraha Mahotsav. Sometimes called Tirubhav Mahotsav, Biraha Mahotsav, or Birahotsav, Festival of Separation, which of course, for us, separation is another way of speaking about a unique type of union. Interestingly, Biraha, Raha means union. So Biraha means Vishesh union, special type of union in the context of separation. So I'm saying all this because this type of spirit permeates all the generation that comes right after Mahaprabhu and his associates. Because imagine, I mean, you are born and just all the parasites of Mahaprabhu have passed away. You were just close to them. I mean, you never know, you may have been in your previous life there, but the spirit of the subjective experience of Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivas, Yamananda, Ramachandra Kaviraj, and all of them is we just missed the main show, if you will. Something like that. So they're express, but of course that creates a very unique type of bhav, very unique type of mood in that generation of separation, of proper lamentation. Again, no neurosis, no depression, but a type of lamentation that is fostering a unique type of union, again, and that becomes like a trademark of that particular generation. See, as you speak about, okay, these are the millennials. This generation have their trademarks. This is the one born in the hippie age, this is their trademark. The ones born in whatever age, this is the trademark, in general terms. So we can say something like this in this connection. The generation coming right after Mahaprabhu and his associates, they express a particular trademark. You can see that in their songs and expressions of the constant theme is separation. And that is, of course, fostering the longing for eventual union. So, my point is Ramachandra Kaviraj, going back to our main character, is part of that group. Narottam Das Thakur, Shyamananda, Pandit, and Srinivasacharya, of course, these are the three main ones of leaders of the group, if you will. But Ramachandra Kaviraj is a close, we will see, he's the best friend of Narottam Das Thakur. So, that's not no small feat. No? I mean, if you can be the best friend of someone like Narottam Das Thakur, and Narottam Das Thakur, as we will see, he makes that quite clear. No? There's, as we were speaking, I think, today in lunch, in the song that Narottam Das composed, among many others. As we know, Narottam Das Thakur was very expert in, like, presenting all the Siddhanta established by the Goswamis in Sanskrit in very sophisticated theological language, he made that, as Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami made that accessible in Bengali language through his Chaitanya Charitamrita. A little bit after Krishna Das Kaviraj, it's a little bit, we could say, one generation after, or half a generation after, however, because Krishna Das Kaviraj had the association of associates of Mahaprabhu. But in the same way, that's the point, Goswami establishing the Sampradaya was very complex and comprehensive theological Sanskrit works. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, one generation after, somehow expressing all those same truths in Bengali, which, as Gurmash always says, is like the popular language of the time, at least especially in the area of Bengal, Mahaprabhu's area. Not Sanskrit is not accessible to everyone, it's more for the intellectual educated area. So Krishna Das Kaviraj is making that more accessible by way of presenting that in Bengali, and Narottam Das Thakur, we could say, is making even more accessible by putting all those same teachings in word, in song format, which is much more simple and it's much more user-friendly, if you will. You sing a song and you learn the Goswami Siddhanta. Of course, this is not excuse like, okay, I will only sing Narottam Das Thakur song and I won't touch the books of the Goswami. It's not that. But it's one way of presenting that same thing. And of course, he does so with so much skill. So one of those songs that he writes for Mahaprabhu, one of many, famous one which stars Sri Krishna, Chaitanya Prabhu, Daya Kora More Tama Vina Kedayalu Jagata Samsari. O Mahaprabhu, be merciful to me. I'm falling in this. Without you, who will rescue me? Basically, without your grace, what if of me? I'm here falling to samsara. And he starts to glorify After that, Mahaprabhu, Nityananda, Premananda, Sukhi, starts to glorify Nityananda Prabhu, Advaita Char, all different members of the Panchatattva to begin with, or most of them. And then, very interestingly, the very last line, he says, Doya Koro Sitapati, how is the last line? Doya Koro Srinivas, what is it? No, last line. Someone of the ones connected, can you help me to recall the last line? I mean, I know the last line, but the first line of the last verse. Ramachandra Sangamahi Narottam Das. That's where I want to go. But the line before he's approaching Srinivas, not Srinivas Acharya. So again, Narottam Das Thakur is the author of the song. So he's glorifying Mahaprabhu and all his associates. And in the last line, he's glorifying Srinivas Acharya, who is a contemporary of him, who are peers, if you will. They are not, strictly speaking, God brothers.
Doya Koro Sri Acharya, Prabhu
Srinivas. So he's speaking to Srinivas Acharya, who is his peer. Srinivas Acharya is disciple of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. Narottam Das Thakur is disciple of Lokanath Das Goswami. So they are kind of spiritual cousins. No? Same generation, but different gurus. But he's addressing his cousin as Acharya. No? So he's putting Srinivas Acharya above his head with the classical humility of Narottam Das. So they say, "Oh Acharya, Srinivas." He's saying, Ramachandra, give me your grace. He said, Ramachandra Sangamai Narottam Das. This Narottam Das is longing for the association of Ramachandra. Of course, again, he says only Ramachandra, but of course, he's not referring to Dasarat Sutta, Sri Ramachandra. He wants to enter a Jodhi or something like this. He's referring to Ramachandra Kaviraj, who is disciple of Srinivas. So somehow we could say Ramachandra Kaviraj is a little bit younger than Narottam, but not that young enough as to have a big gap. They're, again, they're best friends. So somehow they are kind of peers as well. I mean, Srinivas is a peer in terms of spiritual cousins, but Narottam addresses him as an acharya, as a senior. He addresses someone who is considerably junior to him on one level as a peer, as a friend. So he's asking Srinivas, so that's a very interesting combination of points. No? He's addressing someone who is, strictly speaking, is on an equal level of seniority. We are initiated by gurus on the same generation and something like that. But he's addressing him as a charger. And he's addressing someone who is junior to him as an equal. So that also speaks about Narottam Das Thakur's humility. And he is again addressing Srinivas saying, "Oh Srinivas, please be merciful to me. Daya kara, kripa kara. And how your mercy will be expressed to me, towards me? By giving me the association of your Ramachandra, your disciple. Your student Ramachandra, I long for his association. Bless me so I can be associated with your disciple." So try to imagine the emotional context that has to be played out in for that to be what it is. Very nice. I mean, he's addressing a peer, asking for mercy so he can give him the association of his disciple, Ramachandra. So Narottam Das Thakur feels Ramachandra. And it's everyone in our sampradaya says Ramachandra Kaviraj was the best friend of Narottam Das Thakur. So he's praying for the association of his best friend, basically. He's praying for having the association of peers, which is an important point altogether, because sometimes in our sadhu sangha, when we hear sadhu, the term sadhu sangha, of course, implies many things, and it's a long topic, but generally, we can speak about different types of association, and of course, our acharyas have spoken about that, how to associate with different types of devotees, different levels or types of sadhu sangha, with seniors, with peers, and with juniors. You are to behave differently, and that's why sometimes it is spoken about the importance of establishing one's adhikar. Not because, oh, this is high, this is low, I'm higher than you or whatever, but as to properly honor and the relationship with each Vaishnava and serve them accordingly. Because if I treat
a junior as if he will be my guru, maybe that junior will be overwhelmed with that treatment from me and may not be helpful for his or her situation. I may not be serving that person in the best possible way. So only for that purpose one is establishing these differences, to serve in the best possible way. So that's something that is just only reaffirming one's ego service as a servant. It's not just I'm treating you high low because I believe I'm better than you, just how I can serve you better today. So sometimes we need to ascertain some of those things. So, and my point is sometimes it may be easier, relatively easier, to relate with senior Vaishnavs and junior Vaishnavs. But the greatest challenge may be to relate with equals or peers. Because with senior Vaishnavs, I mean, the challenge will be everywhere, of course. But with seniors and juniors, one can easily enter into a more... One can remain relatively on some level of comfort zone. I comes the senior, Jagrudeep. There comes a junior, you enter more like, I will instruct you. But it comes a peer, and the peer is a peer. It's unequal. Like everything, I mean, he won't treat you in a special way. There is no special, I mean, the speciality in itself is equal terms. And sometimes that's not so nice for the ego. We are equal. Generally, sometimes the ego wants to create some hierarchy. Somehow or other, higher or lower, senior, junior, but with everything is on equal terms, absolutely, that may be more challenging in terms of our relationships. And in terms, if you want to grow into an intimate relationship, which that's the idea, sadhu sangha should become not only sangha, but as the Bhagavatam points out over and over again, prasangha. Satam prasangam mama bhirya sambhido. And many other verses in Shastra, in Bhagavatam itself, would say prasanga. Ati prasangas, yeah, many, many. So prasanga means intimate sangha. Sangha in itself implies ideally something intimate, but just for the sake of making that more clear, prasanga, which means intimate relation. An intimate connection, you cannot have an intimate connection with every single person in the universe, nor even with every single Vaishnava. So that, because that requires time, and that requires some connection between nature, sajatiya, and all these things, snigdasya, affection, confidence, similarity of ideals and nature. So it's important to develop that. So we see here, I don't want to get lost and found in that direction, but at this point it's important how Narottam Das Thakur is longing for the association of such peer, someone who, in relation to whom he can share on equal terms, intimate, deep level. He considers that's the mercy he will receive from Acharya Srinivas. Mm-hmm. So that's a very nice way of looking at that. So regarding Ramachandra Kaviraj, again, he's disciple of Srinivas Acharya. But it is said that he got to meet Jiva Goswami, for example, who is the youngest of the Goswamis. So sometimes, again, these personalities were not able to meet most of them, as the song of Narottam Das Thakur say, but, for example, they studied with Jiva Goswami. And Jiva Goswami was the one who gave Ramachandra the title Kaviraj. No? Kaviraj means king of poets. And so we hear many of them, of the associates of Mahaprabhu, with those titles, Krishnadas Kaviraj, Govinda Kaviraj, Ramachandra Kaviraj. So, here we have one of them. Actually, to say that there were 8 main disciples of Srinivas Acharya who were called the 8 Kavirajs. So, he was one of the 8. So, the 8 kings of poetry. So, basically, he composed some books. I cannot recall now their name. I think Siddhanta Chandrika and some others, and many poetries also for Mahaprabhu describing his beauty and his mercy, and again, in the spirit of lamentation, but only me, I'm here, not being able to take advantage of that, and so on. So mostly those are the things that are shared by Ramachandra Kaviraj, what I mentioned. His father, associate of Mahaprabhu, he himself, of course, being a great devotee, best friend of Narottam Das, disciple of Gopal Bhatta, whose appearance day is today, given this title by Jiva Goswami, being one of the eight, disciple of Srinivasa Acharya. Receiving this title from Jiva Goswami, being one of the eight Kavirajas. So maybe some further research we can find some of his books translated, I don't know. So something. In connection to him, some of the other things that I wanted to share as well. So, Sri Ramachandra Kaviraj Mahasaya Ki Jai. It's nice to at least say something about these personalities, and hopefully not only something, because I've seen sometimes devotees, okay, today is the appearance of who? Ramachandra Kaviraj, I don't know him. It's not corporal name, so we can skip that one. Tomorrow is a disappearance of another Kaviraj, another Goswami, it's a mastami? No, so we can continue. No need for fasting, we can continue normally. And maybe we don't put that much attention in those great personalities that we don't have a clue who they are. But actually, because we don't have a clue who they are, that's the reason why we should pay attention. So we know who they are, because for some reason they are in the Panjika or in the calendar, and our acharyas have considered we need to celebrate this for some reason, because these personalities have something or are made of something which is worthy of celebration. I mean, these are the things that we should be celebrating, actually. These are the real reasons for celebrating, knowing the life of these personalities, the love they have, how they attain their goal. Some, of course, need to see that's representing that goal. So all of these personalities are like embodiments of the goal we want to attain. So on a daily basis, to speak about them, remember them, hear about their life and pastimes, that's crucial for us getting closer to that goal and having reference points of people who personify that even. You know? So it's important, if we are really willing to get closer to that goal, not to say to attain, because that may not happen tomorrow, but at least to get closer in order to attain that goal, then we should show some inspiration to know as much as we can of all those personalities who represent that goal, basically. Especially if we don't have a clue about who they are. We have so much clue about so many useless stuff in our mind. We know so many stupid things yet that still are there going on. And we don't have a clue about who is Ramachandra Kaviraj, and we do not make that much effort for knowing about that. So if that's the situation, I'm not saying that's the situation, but if that's the situation, that's the situation. We have to do something about that. I mean, that speaks about who we are. I'm not so interested about getting to know about Mahaprabhu's Nitya Parishads, but I'm happy about still having in my mind so much unnecessary information that is informing or misinforming my movements in this world, and I'm not doing as much as I could to get rid of that, to deconstruct all those types of discourses. But when some celebration comes, some portal comes like this, so it's important, again, not to feel bad about ourselves, but to feel bad about ourselves in a sustainable way, no? To have some healthy repentance, no? Trying to see, I mean, like Mahaprabhu said, I don't have a taste for that. These things, we need to be, yeah, we need to be like courageous enough to recognize those things and moments in which we clearly are shown as in evidence that, okay, this clearly shows I have no taste, at least on some level. This clearly shows I still have a long way to go. And I have to welcome that, because if I'm not welcoming that, probably I'm being hypocritical, not wanting to see where I am, wanting to see what it takes to be where I should be. So if we are willing to make progress, we will be taking as much opportunities as we can, as uncomfortable as that may be, as challenging as that may be, because that will reflect back where we are, and that contrast to where we want to be, that sometimes may be shocking, but again, all this has to be analyzed in the context of the unparalleled grace that is knocking on our door. So even if you realize the most embarrassing, unconfessable thing about yourself, still you have to see that in the context of Mahaprabhu's knocking on your door. Because that's still, that's a fact. That's a fact, as Guru Maharaj was saying the other day, yesterday. Now, who we are, and what did we do to come here to receive this gift? Actually, we act against deserving that. And maybe that's why we received that. When we deserve it the less, we need it the most. So it's important also, again, to balance that type of introspection and brutal honesty. Okay, you want to be brutally honest, that means it includes the brutal grace that is coming to you. Richard Rohr, he's a Christian Franciscan monk, and he uses a term that I like. He uses the term radical grace. Of course, he speaks in the concept of Jesus, but for us, it's that term is most applicable to Mahaprabhu, Nityananda, Prabhu's dispensation. And you can use all these terms, brutal, radical, extreme. So if you want to be brutally honest, you have to include all those things that are equally brutal in your life. Brutal in the good sense of the term. Maybe brutal may not be the best word, but extremely generous in this case. So in this way, we will survive our introspection, if you will. And not ending on a psychiatrist just like, oh, and over-identifying with your shadow or something. Anyhow, Ramachandra Kaviraj ki jai. So, Shyamananda raised his hand some while ago. So, yeah.
So, speaking of this, the ki jai part.
Yeah.
You mentioned that it's, the jai is that it will conquer over our ego and so on. What does that mean? Like when we say, for example, Shri Gopal Bhakta Goswami Ki Jai, is that that he will, like, should, because like we say it for everyone, but it seems like it's enough if one of them conquers our ego, that we, are we asking all of them just to make sure that at least one?
That's a good point. That's a good point, especially in the sense that if we are speaking about conquering ego, for us conquering the ego seems like I think Gurnisa made this comic of, no, like one, or maybe it was the mind, not the ego, but it's like similar. Like someone was like fighting, no, like in a boxing match, which was like the mind and the devotee.
Maya.
Maya and oneself.
Yeah.
So Maya was like a gigantic monster, and oneself was like a tiny thing, boxing person that you see. You are not for boxing. You have to eat something more first. So implying Krishna says in the Gita, no, Maya mama Maya duratya ya. He says this Maya, my Maya, which means Maya Shakti, is difficult to conquer, difficult to overcome. I mean, if Krishna says difficult, what's difficult for him? I mean, it's not difficult for him, but when he uses the term difficult, what must he be thinking? I mean, for sure, he's not thinking about the same things we consider difficult. He's looking at us, at our predicament, and say, yeah, difficult. But of course, again, there is hope. Well, we read the first two lines that we are about to commit suicide. We should say, stop, 1 second. But if you surrender unto me, that thing which is almost impossible is easy to overcome. So something from impossible becomes easy. Relatively easy again. We may still, Maharaj, it's not easy. It's difficult. I mean, by comparison to, if you try to do that without Krishna's grace, that's a joke. We have to understand those statements in Shastra sometimes when they say, Krishna says in the Gita also, susukam kartum abhyayam, bhakti is easy to perform. And you say, it's not easy. Well, yes and no, as we said the other day, but in comparison to other paths, it's relatively easier. You know, you don't need to go to the cave and stop speaking and stop eating and stop sleeping and stop, neti, neti, neti. But you can remain where you are. But, of course, then comes the other part, which will say, in one sense, bhakti is the most difficult. Oh, you can remain whatever you're doing, but just surrender fully unto me. Okay? So Krishna knows how to sell the product. Ah, it's a bit easy, no? You can continue there, here, good packaging, well, and you go. And you start to open and you realize, Sarvadharman Parityaja. So, but my point was that, yeah, ego, in the case of Chamananda's question, he was speaking in terms of the ego, and it's a formidable enemy, if you want to call enemy. But, and he say, well, do we need to say ki jai to all the personalities we say when we say, for example, the Prema Dwani after the Arti? Because maybe with only glorifying one, that should be enough to conquer our ego. I think, at least I got that point to begin with, which is important, because we may say, my ego is so big, my ego is so big. Just one of those personalities is thousands and millions of times more powerful than your ego. So even if you are able to get proper grace, to grasp proper mercy from one of those channels, sarva siddhi hoy, sadhu sangha sarva shastra koi, lava matra sadhu sangha sarva shastra. If you get how to get proper sadhu sangha in a moment, that's perfect. That's you can attain all perfection there. Because sometimes, again, we end up over-identifying with or anarthas to the point that we feel, oh, my anarthas are more powerful than my guru's grace or something like that. And even if you put all your anarthas together, that you don't have a clue how many you have, but try all the ones you know and all the ones that you don't know, which are probably much more, conscious and subconscious layers, only one point, that still does not compare with how powerful is Guru's grace, Krishna's grace, Mahaprabhu's grace in your life. I mean, if you have to put the two on the scale, there's still no point of comparison. So should we say ki jai to all of them, or maybe from tomorrow on we can just limit ourselves to Dauji Gopal ki jai and then end of the Prema Dwani or something? Of course, the idea is the ki jai has many implications. You know, jai is connection with the idea of Jayati, or victory, or Vijay, victory. And ki means all. So all victory. Of course, you can say all victory for Dauji Gopal, like a way of all victory to you, but of course at the same time you can understand, I mean, they are victorious already. I mean, it's not that they need to be victorious over what? If you are victorious, it's victorious over something. So it's not that someone is defeating them and they still need to be victorious over. But we are experiencing, going back to Guru Nishtha's comic, one defeat after one knockout after another. That's in the first round. And 1 second of the fight, starting, end of the fight. again. End of the fight. And we fly, whoever. No? Like sometimes, I've seen some videos, I remember some time ago. Bhakti Rasa shares some video of, and there are many of them, I think, of these people who is like, I don't know how to say in English, like before they are fighting, to people before fighting, and before starting the fight, people start like to, how to say, show off, like, and to make and speak to the other person and to try to make that person afraid and to show, like, and ask the audience, please, ki jais, please. Like, just showing off from a or horrendous ego, no? And the other person is just like waiting, no? Tolerating, not saying anything, and just like the fight starts. Okay, entry, go. The other person, and the one who was showing off disappears in 1 second. The Bhakti Rasa once uploaded a compilation of those cases, no? And of course at the end there's this lesson that be careful how you present yourself, because I mean it can be a new record. So the point is, when we say ki jai, we're actually asking them, be victorious over me. I need victory. I mean, I'm experiencing one defeat after another, after another, after another. When I forget your shelter, I mean, there's no other option. I mean, when Krishna says again, if you don't take shelter in me, that's your experience in Maya Shakti, especially when you think that you are being successful. In Maya Shakti, that's when you are being like the most in a most embarrassed situation, where you are not able even to grasp that the fight is over 3 days ago, and you still think like, oh, I'm about to win. nobody's in the whole arena already. Everyone left. So we are the ones who need victory. We are the ones who need victory over Maya, victory over our low impulses. So that's why we glorify them, begging to them, please give me your grace so I can be victorious, basically. And of course, since we are, unfortunately, I mean, in my case, we are not able to take full advantage of what even one of those personalities have to offer. Okay, we include all of them in the equation. At least from in one stage, the key jai will be pronounced from that side. Of course, in more evolved situations, there may be more different nuances. But yeah, from our situation, we are basically asking them, defeat me, basically. Until now, I'm being defeated by Maya Shakti. I want to be defeated by Swarup Shakti. I mean, being defeated by Swarup Shakti implies real victory. Basically, something like that. I want my guru's will, Krishna's will, to defeat my own selfish, separate sense of self, my separate desires, which still are lurking in my mind. Anya vilasita sunyam, I'm praying for that. Gyan karma dhyanabritam, I'm praying for that standard of devotion. Hai dukhiya pratihata, but still that's not happening, it's not coming. Still I perceive a separate agenda. Still, I'm seeing more Krishna consciousness as Krishna facilitating my will and he accommodating to my agenda than the opposite. I'm not still yet that much interested in what Krishna's agenda has for me, but I want him to come and make my own agendas more smooth. Which again, Krishna accepts. Okay, we have to begin somewhere. Chatur vidava jantimam, and so on. So some people comes to me, they are afflicted, they want wealth, they want to have a sustainable sattvic experience in this world, and they ask me help. So I appreciate that approach, but that's far from what Raga Bhakti is about, as Kumaraj was speaking yesterday. The type of interest that a Raga Bhakta will show in a particular direction of service, in a particular direction of a servant that will capture Krishna's attention like anything else. And again, it's not something we will arrive from one day to another, but at least we shouldn't cheat ourselves by thinking Krishna Bhakti is something else. So that's why we say Kijaya, and I mention this because it can be totally mechanical thing if we don't bear this in mind, because it's something that you maybe just waiting for the key to say Jai. Huh? Kijai, Jai, Jai. And you don't even have a clue what you are, what the jai means, what the ki means, who is the person you are saying ki jai to. So it can become niyama graha very easily. Rupa Goswami said that's counterproductive to bhakti, which means you are doing something without understanding why you are doing that. To act, to follow the rules without knowing what's the purpose of the rules. He said that will affect negatively your bhakti. So be careful, because every day we are saying ki jai so many times, every day we are singing the same mantra so many times, reading the same book, the same, quote-unquote. If we are properly situated, it's never the same. The ki jai will never be the same. But it can become. Like I was, when I was in Radhakunda some months ago, I was hearing one bhava from there giving one lecture, very nice. And he comes from a line where they engage in Lila Smaranam and so on, but he's very sober. He was saying at one point, even if you are meditating every day on the Astakaliya Lila, the eightfold pastimes of Krishna in the context of Lila Smaranam and the Siddha Swarup your guru gave you, he's speaking from that particular angle. He says, you have to be very careful because you can make all of that something mechanical. And you may be engaging in Lila Smaranam of Astakaliya Lila, and that can, and that will be, if that's mechanical, that's considered by the bhakti, he said. See, that's not Raganuga Bhakti, he said. Imagine, you externally imagine, I'm a Radhakum, and I have this identity, such and such manjari, I'm thinking about. But if you are just, I mean, you can make even that something totally mechanical. And every single day, okay, now here, now meditating, and that's now this happening, I'm going that, I have to bring this. And it's like out of duty-bound stuff or whatever, no? What comes next? Okay, what's the time? I'm almost finishing. Okay, finish, and you continue with it. That's Vaidhi Bhakti. That's not even Radha Nama Bhakti. So it's important that we approach, like, all these details. It's a detail, but, I mean, the essence is in the details also. When someone loves someone, I don't know, and that person will pay attention to some details, and the other person will pay attention to those details and will appreciate, wow, you are so concerned about me that you are paying attention even to that detail. You want to take into consideration all the aspects of that, not just the main thing. No? Like sometimes, as we the other day were quoting this Pranam mantra to Lalita Devi, she's depicted as perceiving one drop of perspiration falling from the divine couple. You can say, ah, drop of perspiration, I mean, you're neurotic. Let that perspiration come, it's perspiration, I mean. But for Lalita Sakhi, it's not perspiration only, it's not a detail. I mean, that has to be removed. Something has to be done. And again, she's willing to die thousands of times to to remove that drop of perspiration. Again, all this may sound like, this sounds dysfunctional. You're willing to die a million times to remove one drop of perspiration. I mean, it doesn't seem like pretty balanced. But again, when you love someone, I mean, for us it sounds out of balance because we are out of balance because we don't love. So that's how it works. You don't love, you are out of balance. You see someone who loves and you feel, oh, that person is out of balance. It's crazy. Yes. But it's a type of madness that you cannot understand because you are under the influence of another type of madness. So as I always say, free will means you just choose which type of madness you will be under the influence of. Maya Shakti? Oh, Sarup Shakti, Bhakti Shakti. So my point is, yes, detail, but as the more you progress, I mean, you will be offering your whole life into a detail, into one particular adjustment. Like Lalita Sakhi, she's offering her lifetime millions of times in that removal of one drop of perspiration. Of course, we are not on that level. We cannot force ourselves into that level. But it speaks about detailed practice. That's how we will advance more and more in bhajan. It's becoming more detailed, more specific, more attentive to subtleties. Again, not without knowing the concept of neurosis and the concept of ego. No, I pay attention to so many details. You are not saying all this. It has nothing to do with what others are doing or not doing. It's one's affair of one's heart with one's idea. But naturally, you will be drawn to those things. If you have like a mentality of service, I remember once I entered one bathroom. I mean, it's far from Lalita Sakhi's standard, but we have to begin somewhere. And I entered the bathroom, and the bathroom was a mess. Like generally, bathroom in a national will be. So, and there was a sign in the bathroom. Now I say, so if you see a mess in this, that something is out of order, Krishna is showing you that. That's your service. So that was a good strategy, of course. I was caught, like, what to do now? I was seeing that before reading the sign, no? So that was even more committing. I mean, I was more committed because, I mean, you read the sign, I mean, the sign is telling you, it's a mess, you do it. But ideally, you don't need the sign for that to realize. So that's a point, no? In time, you start to see things that maybe other people are not seeing. As I mentioned before, you start to identify with a necessity that other people are not identified with yet, because that's not the moment yet. They are identified with another necessity. There are so many layers of necessity. As Guru Maharaj always mentions, Guru is a desperate person. He or she has so many necessities, internally speaking, but of course the question is how many of his students are identified with that level of necessities. Not many. And again, with this I'm not criticizing anyone. It's just how things are, how things work generally. But the point is, there is a more detailed appreciation of certain necessities, and that's a way we can measure our progress. How much our perception of necessities become more and more detailed, and less general. Because in the beginning, so what are the necessities? Who will cook? Who will clean the bathroom? Okay, all necessities covered. Life goes on. No, there are so many other necessities that we may not even yet perceive that are necessities. That's where we are. I'm not blaming anyone. The problem is when you realize it's a necessity and you are not attending that. Then that's problematic. But if you don't have a clue that that's a necessity, it's because maybe it's not a necessity for you yet. Like for a five-year-old, you cannot speak to him about certain adult level of necessities, but eventually they have to come. And if the person is willfully blind to that, that's problematic. Like as we always say, to be a Kanishtha Adhikari, a neophyte practitioner, that's not something bad. That's something necessary. But to remain a Kanishtha when you have to graduate to the next stage, that's problematic. When you no longer need to remain a kindergarten boy, but you insist on remaining there forever, that's problematic. But when you need to be there, I mean, you have to be there. That's healthy. So that's a nice way of, again, in a sustainable way, but applying that like thermometer, like measuring yardstick, you say in English? Where I am. Okay, which are the necessities I am identifying with at the present moment in my life? You can ask yourself. You can make that interrogation to yourself. Which are the main necessities? What do I perceive as necessity now? And of course, something will come. Do not be afraid of what answer will come. And then try to see, okay. I mean, do not condemn yourself for that for sure, but just try to keep like a broad and ample perspective of which other necessities can I gradually add to the equation as to progress in this path. How can I make this particular necessity I have today made and download and more an updated version of that necessity? Like actualize that necessity in a more refined way. I need to eat. Okay, yes. We agree. Survival instinct. Survival of the fittest. Jiva jivasu jivanam. But then, okay, no, I don't need to eat. I need to eat on one level, but on a deeper level, I need to honor prasad. Okay, so which are all the implications of honoring prasad? And how can I make that, and include other Vaishnavas in that? How can I please the Vaishnava by honoring prasad, by preparing prasad? And so many things start to come from the idea, I'm hungry. So I'm hungry, yes, I believe you, but that's if everything ends there, it's just like a brute, selfish impulse that you are just trying to satisfy. And that's not the goal of life either. As we know, animals are solving those problems much better than us. Without that many struggle and work and effort, they are eating, sleeping, mating, defending very successfully. We have so many problems to do that. And why, as Guru Maharaj says, because those are not the ultimate goals of life for us. For animals, that's the ultimate goal, so they know how to solve them. But since our ultimate goal is jiva se tatva jignasyam narto yascha karma bihi, says the Bhagavatam, that's another verse, pramatum nidanam pasanapina pashati. But the Bhagavatam is saying, jivasya tatva jignasa. The real goal of human life is to inquire about, as we said the other day, who we are and what we could be. So in this way, trying to link our necessities with the necessities. And of course, in time, there will be like a shift where, it's not forced, but gradually you will get to identify more with the necessities of the object of your affection. Not so much that the object of my affection satisfy my necessities, but which are their necessities and how can I identify with them? How can I live for pleasing those necessities? And those necessities become your necessities by way of identification in love. Because that's love, just in case, for you to know. If you love someone, means you are totally identified with the necessities of the beloved. And those, her or his necessities become yours. You don't have separate necessities in love. If you still have them, that same degree, you don't love yet. And it's okay, it's part of life. I mean, we are working on that, but it's good to define things as they are and not to create a fictional idea of what's love, especially about what's love, because that's the word, Swami Maharaj will say, one of the most used words and the most misunderstood one, along with I and some others. I love you. Three most used words, three less understood words. Who I am, what love means, and what do you mean? Because I say you, but I'm just objectifying a human being and I'm making a consume object and just projecting who knows how many layers of prejudice, and that's you. That's not so romantic. But you say, I love you, because you need to present that in a good packaging. But if you really start like to dismember the implications of that, I mean, the last thing you will end up with is, I love you. It's like a total, generally speaking. So we don't want to have to experience that type of contradiction any longer, or that grotesque level. So that's why we say ki jai. Yeah. So ki jai, ki jai. See, that's basically the implication. It's not just repeating ki jai, magical syllables, but the implication is, give me your shelter, give me your grace. Again, triumph on me. I want to live for your bidding, for you doing your will, at least in a gradual process. So help me to get closer to that idea, to replace my false sense of centeredness and really establish the real center. And I need to say, to repeat that to myself as many times as possible. That's why we say ki jai, ki jai, ki jai, ki jai, ki jai. Like a constant remembrance of that as well. And again, when we do that homework properly, the ki jai will come, will go from another side, will be expressed from more and more mature sides, with more and more identification with the necessity of the object of our affection. Okay. So, any other question here? If not, I have one question here, and that may be the last.
I kind of wanted to ask her to follow up.
Yeah, let's go with that one.
Not really, but you mentioned the Astikale Lila Smarana. And someone once told me that I should put an alarm on for Gora Astikale Lila Smarana exercise each time of the day, have an alarm going. And I was wondering, that sounded like a nice idea, but I don't know if that would actually like be beneficial practice. Is it kind of like imposing something on it?
I mean, there are many things we are doing in a kind of imposed way, if you will, also. And I'm not criticizing that, no? In the sense that sometimes we recognize we don't have a spontaneous flow of attraction or awareness towards something, but we kind of force our attention to go in that direction in some way or another, no? And if that, I mean, phalina farichate, you judge the fruit by its tree by its fruit. So if the fruit of that particular technique is, I mean, I'm becoming aware of what Mahaprabhu is doing. Again, it's not the same that you just chant Harinam and Lila Smaranam explodes spontaneously from your chanting, which ideally should happen at one point of one's chanting. By chanting Nam, Nam will take you naturally to Rupa, Guna, Lila, without like, okay, now I will meditate what's Krishna doing at this time of the day. I mean, it won't happen at one point, but again, you will never reach that if you are not at this point doing something about it. And the doing something about it can take different forms, and yeah, that can be one way of doing that, because it's a way of at least being aware, okay, this is happening, and at this moment of the day, maybe there 10 minutes after that, mind goes somewhere else. It's not like till the next lila I will be absorbed in that while doing whatever I'm doing externally. Generally, that may not happen. And that's how we were speaking about that with Guru Maharaj the other day. Those who have as their main sadhana, lila smaranam, there are people who really engage in that for considerable periods of the day. It's not that they begin like 24 hours absorbing each specific period of the day, and they are there. I mean, they are struggling with the same things we are struggling, as I mentioned to you the other day. Now, if you go to Radhakund and receive Ekadashi Bhav, it doesn't mean that you are, I mean, you have transcended an artist and you don't need any longer to deal with envy. And I mean, you are in the same position that someone who is on that same stage who didn't receive that particular method. So many of those practitioners may like sit for a while and just may go through the 8 periods in their minds, like a technique of fixing the mind in the lila. But they may do the whole 24-hour period round in an hour or 2 hours or something. It's not that they are the 24 hours. When they are sleeping, they are dreaming about what's going on, or they are not sleeping. Of course, very advanced sadhakas and above that, that's another thing. But in general, so there are different ways of approaching this. So in some cases, that may be one. Like when you are chanting your Diksha mantras 3 times a day, in one way, it will be a way of saying, okay, I will stop whatever I'm doing, and I will like enfold, we say, wrap up, enfold, and try to put whatever, I mean, you start your day doing that, trying to put the rest of the day in perspective, but knowing during the day some distractions may be there. So when I start the day, I try to, hopefully, the first things I'm doing is this type of things, chanting Harinam, Diksha Mantra, and so on. Then the day starts to unfold. The morning sattva starts to be replaced by midday rajas, and one is like that, for sure. And one may be affected by that, so it's not that one is able to continue with the morning fog. But when that's about to get totally lost, if you will, somehow, midday comes, and you sit again and chant Gayatri, chant Diksha Mantra. So trying to remember why I'm doing what I'm doing, for whom. And then the day continues to unfold, night comes, tamas comes to visit. Before closing the day, sitting again to try to wrap up on which was this day about, dedicated from whom? Guru, Goranga, Radha, Krishna, and so on. So again, in the beginning, maybe a little bit forced. Okay, I have to sit. And it doesn't mean that you sit and you necessarily even absorb in what you are reciting. I mean, that's another thing. I mean, you can recite your Diksha mantras and your mind may be going shopping who knows where. So it requires some discipline, not only to stop what you are doing and sit, but even to stop where the mind is going and try to focus. Again, that's, as Krishna says in the Gita, that's not easy. But it's possible by practice and detachment. He's saying these two things, basically. Abhyasa, vairagya. By training the mind, by acting in a certain way that the mind is trained to be detached from certain things, and of course focusing others. So yeah, focusing, putting an alarm. Better to put an alarm for that than to put an alarm for who knows which other things that sometimes people put alarm for. So those are nice udipanas, if you will, if we want to use the term on that level. Some reminder, Mahaprabhu. But again, also be careful of not making that something mechanical. Because after some time, one gets accustomed to everything, unfortunately. Accustomed in the sense of, I mean, Krishna Bhakti is so extraordinary, and every item of our practice is totally supramundane, but we can get accustomed to that as something ordinary. Prasad, Kirtan, Arti, Guru, Kijai. Everything becomes like, yeah, I know what's that about. I do it every day. Maybe they don't say that, but but you start to get accustomed to that. So you lose the magic. You lose the glance of appreciation, gets lost, and everything becomes ordinary. While it remains extraordinary, once ordinary glance at that do not allow us to feel the extraordinariness of that. And we just, again, may engage mechanically in, oh yeah, Purvan Lila Mahaprabhu now is going out. Thank you, alarm, talk to you later. Midday Lila, yeah, Madhyam Lila Mahaprabhu is doing this, going to the forest with his... Yeah, but the point again, what's the fruit of that? You have to understand that, no? I mean, you are putting the alarm for that to remind you about that, and something has to happen also. It's not just, oh, nice, Mahaprabhu is doing that. The first days one will feel like that, because whenever you start something, you are excited just because it's new. Anything. You receive Diksha mantras, oh, new mantras, I'm chanting with Diksha mantras. But after 1, 2, 3 years, that Utsahamayi is not there. Because it shouldn't be there. Utsahamayi is the initial enthusiasm. You start anything and you're enthusiastic because just you're starting, it's new. Maybe you don't have a clue what's that about, but it's new. Oh, let's go, wow. But after time, that initial enthusiasm has to be replaced by another type of enthusiasm. Because if that's not there, then it becomes mechanical. It can become a torture even. And you will stop doing that. Because not because that's a torture, but because one is addressing that from wrong. And everything can become that. So many people I've heard saying, no, Maharaj, I've stopped chanting japa because I don't feel anything. So... So, what's the next question there? Why I don't feel anything? Because the japa is to blame there, Harinam is to blame there, the mercy is not flowing anymore, Krishna is no longer present in his name, the current, Guru Parampara current drive up or whatever, or I'm not chanting properly and that's why I don't feel anything. Generally, that's the question. Of course, always is the question in that case, the answer to that question. But generally, we don't want to enter into that question. Why I don't feel anything? That's what Mahaprabhu say again, Durdaiva Midrishami Hajanina Nurag. I don't feel anything with chanting. And immediately comes a third verse to reply, why you don't feel anything while chanting? How will you be feeling something when chanting and everything. Tadyada Pisunichi Natarada Pisunichi Maninamana Kirtaniya Sadhana. But that's a hard pill to swallow, as Guru Maharaj said. No? And one say, I love Mahaprabhu, I want to join his movement. I heard that sloka, oh, that's impossible. Mm-hmm. I gotta follow him. No, we shouldn't feel like that. But that's an important verse that always, at least for me, that's really, like, gives context, puts everything in context, puts my own reality in context. When I'm feeling anything, I know I should not, it's not supposed to be felt as a gaudiya. Okay, not like blame, I shouldn't be feeling this, I should be feeling only this. Not in that sense, but there are things that come that you know, I mean, this is to be gradually eradicated. So why I'm feeling this? You think in the third verse of Sikshasakam, for sure, you will have some reply for that moment. No? Why I'm disturbed, why I'm angry, why I'm agitated, and you will find there, I'm not being humble enough, probably, I'm not being tolerant enough, maybe I'm not offering proper respect, or I'm the... Whatever the case, situation, but it always works. It's like a very... Like, if you want some magical formula, there you have it. It's a challenging one. Every magic has its challenge. It's not like a cheap thing. But that helps, helpful, and helps to keep things non-mechanical, again, and to keep initial taste, make that more mature, and that grow into, of course... the ultimate taste, Ruchi Bhava, and so on. Anyhow, Shriman Mahaprabhu ki. So, I think, sure.
Just a quick, if anyone has inclination to meditate on Mahaprabhu's Eightfold Pastime, Maharaj gave a beautiful series of classes 2 years ago.
Who?
You.
Ah, okay.
And the Eightfold Pastime, so Mahaprabhu, so I'm sure you could.
Again? Yeah. That's mechanical. Yeah. I listen to that. I mean, I'm not promoting people here in my classes, but that's one form. And I'm not saying you are the one saying that. It happens to all of us. Have you read that book? Oh, yeah, I read that one. Mm-hmm. Remember Mahaprabhu when he was hearing from Gadadhar Pandit? Pralachari, Dhruvachari, He didn't say, I already heard that one. And I'm Mahaprabhu. I came for tasting Radha Bhav. Let's go to the real thing. 10th canto. Why 4th canto? 7th canto? Get quicker. Mahaprabhu never said a word. He asked more for more of the same. But again, if he asking 100 times to Gadadhar, again, Prahlad Maharaj chariot. Qualities of Prahlad. Again. 100 times it is said he was requesting more. So it means it was never the same for him. I mean, you won't ask, tell me the same story 100 times while it is always the same for me. I mean, you are a masochist. You're doing that. But if you are discovering a new level of relishment after each syllable and narration, you will say again, again, again. So the same with studying books, hearing Harikatha. Because, Harikatha is dynamic, and we should be also engaged in some dynamic practice and progress. So as Harikatha has its own current, its own dynamics and progress, if you will, its own movement, so it will never be the same. But you yourself should also have your own dynamics and movement, so you should never be the same either. So when two things that are ideally never the same and are always changing and moving meet each other again and meet each other again, it will never be the same. Actually, it's worthy of meeting again each other as many times as possible. So that was happened between the meeting of Bhagavat and Mahaprabhu. Bhagavatam is never the same. It's always evolving. Mahaprabhu, what to speak? So the two of them meet one time, again. The two of them are asking again. Not only Mahaprabhu is asking, speak again. The Bhagavatam itself is asking again. So it's never the same story. And so with this I'm not saying, so now you will make a vow to only hear one single class and one section of the Bhagavatam during your whole life. I'm not saying that. But on some level, it's a good, to have that type of experience, it's a good experiment. Guru Maharaj himself say how many times he studied the Bhagavatam, how many times he studied Chaitanya Charitamrita. Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta will ask to his disciples, they didn't have Bhakti Shastri or this type of scriptural degrees, but somehow he will say things like, you have to study Chaitanya Bhagavat 108 times. And of course, you cannot do that if you don't get a taste for that. You go crazy. And it's not like 220-page book or something. So the implication of this is it's never the same book. I mean, and you see all the books of the Goswamis are all coming from the same book, Bhagavatam. So much is coming and still coming and still should be coming from. Those series are there waiting for all of us, of course. Okay. Shriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sri Hari Nam Sankirtan ki jai, Sri Sri Dauji Gopal ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Virabhab Mahotsav Tithi Sri Gopal Bhata Goswami ki jai, Tirabhab Mahotsav Tithi Sri Ramachandra Kaviraj ki jai, Gaur Pramanam Haribo. Vancha kalpataru vishtagri pasan rupyai vacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah ananta koti vaishnava vrinda ki jai gaur hari bol.